TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Mountaintop Removal in Kentucky. What makes our lights go on? In part one of this program, you heard from the authors Wendell Berry and Michael Pollan. Wendell Berry grew up on a farm in Kentucky, taught creative writing in college, and returned to farming in Kentucky in 1965. He's a prolific author of novels, short stories, poems, and essays. He is a friend and supporter of Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, an organization committed to halting the practice of mountaintop removal. Wendell Berry had brought Terry Blanton and Burt Lauderdale from Kentuckians for the Commonwealth to Northern California in September 2006. They found support from the organic farming community in Marin County. Now you will hear directly from two members of an extraordinary organization.
My name is Burt Lauderdale. I'm the executive director of Kentuckians for the Commonwealth. Kentuckians for the Commonwealth is a statewide citizens organization. We're celebrating our 25th anniversary next month. We are a citizen social justice organization. We've been fighting for social justice for a quarter of a century, and we're real proud of what we've accomplished. KFTC is a community of people taking action for justice. Ours is a membership organization of just your typical, common, everyday, extraordinary Kentuckians working on a wide range of issues. We work with average folks in communities across the state to become extraordinary community leaders. We work with those community leaders to build organizations, and we work with those organizations at the local and state level to win policy and make change in Kentucky to make it a better state. Right now, one of the main things that we're working on is what you've heard about tonight. It's mountaintop removal. Mountaintop removal is a process where to increase company profits, coal companies, in order to get at thin seams of coal, will blast the tops off mountains and dump them in the valleys. If you can imagine driving to San Francisco and then driving back a month later and the top of Mount Tam is gone and dumped in the valley next to it, that's what people are dealing with on a daily basis in eastern Kentucky. We think it's an important issue for a number of reasons, and I think we're going to talk about it some more tonight. But as we were preparing to come to California on this trip, a friend of mine said, well, that's great, but why should they care? And it's testimony to sort of how absorbed we are in the issue that it hadn't really occurred to me to wonder why you all should care. But I thought it might be a good idea to put some thought into it before we got here. And, you know, there's sort of there's a couple of reasons that may seem obvious. It's a horrendous, devastating practice that is really an abomination, and everybody should care. And so we hope that folks will care about mountaintop removal and what's happening in central Appalachia and eastern Kentucky because of that. But if that's not enough, it is also because we're all affected. You all probably, I'm sure, recognize that energy and energy use is going to be one of the most important issues of the next century. And there's a wide range of energy sources and a wide range of issues that involves. But coal is one of the most abundant, most important, and most destructive forms of energy that we use in this country or in the world. And there's a serious political movement to increase our dependence on it. There's 280 new coal-fired power plants proposed to be built in the next couple decades. And if that happens and they use the existing technology, we are all in trouble. Coal is the number one source of greenhouse gas emissions. Coal is the number one source of mercury pollution. Coal is the number one source of particulate pollution that kills tens of thousands of people every year. It kills tens of thousands of people every year, and it is changing the global climate. So everyone is affected by coal, and mountaintop removal is at the front edge, the cutting edge, if you will, of any issue or any consideration about coal and how it's obtained and how it's used. And therefore, it's an issue that affects everyone, and it occurred to me that maybe that's a reason to care. But then there also was there was a third reason that I didn't really think about until this afternoon. We were fortunate enough today and are extremely grateful to visit four farms in the county and learn about what's been going on here and the ambition about building a better future. And after we had visited a couple of these farms, we got back in the van, headed to the next one, and Wendell commented, as he sometimes does, made you think differently about things. He asked about for us to contemplate the different mindset between the farmers that we had met with today and what they were trying to do working with nature for to build something versus the mindset of a strip miner in eastern Kentucky who approaches a mountain with only technical questions about how are we going to take this down. And it seems such a stark contrast, but it really is land use just at different ends of the spectrum. And as we talked about and thought about this today and saw what folks are doing here, our campaign to end mountaintop removal is a cornerstone of a larger project, a 10-year organizing project that we are pursuing called the Canary Project. And the express goal of the Canary Project is to build a better future beyond coal. That's the mindset that we want to have in Kentucky about what this work is about. So we resist the destruction, we fight against the devastation, but we do it within a context of trying to build a better future beyond coal, which is very similar to the ambition that we saw today, without the coal part. And perhaps a third reason why folks here in West Marin would care about mountaintop removal and what's happening in eastern Kentucky. So we appreciate very much the invitation and the welcome that we've received, and I think we're going to open it up for a conversation about these and other issues and whatever's on y'all's mind.
That was Burt Lauderdale, Executive Director of Kentuckians for the Commonwealth. Now you will hear from Terry Blanton. She works to fight mountaintop removal on their project called the Canary Project. Terry Blanton.
I grew up in Harlan County, southeastern part of Kentucky. Over 1 million tons of coal was mined in my county, but over 30% of the people live in poverty. So I don't see how coal has actually saved my county. And, you know, we talk about coal, and a lot of people don't really realize, but 52% of the people in the United States gets their energy from coal-fired power plants. 52%. 97% of Kentucky's energy comes from coal-fired power plants. They always want me to tell my story, and it makes me a little sad, but I don't know if you know about all the coal mining accidents that's happened in the East this year. There's been 31 coal miners killed in the coal mines, deep mining, just this year alone, more than any number in the past. And the last mining accident was in a place called Darby in Harlan County, where five men were killed. And, you know, these men die because laws aren't enforced. The coal industry is above the law. They operate above the law. Just like Wendell said, when you try to get in their way, they just shove you out of the way. So they've been doing this practice for over 100 years where I come from. Still people are poor. Now they're raping the land and the people. But, you know, a lot of people think that it's not their problem, but Wendell and I both say that we all live downstream or downwind from a coal-fired power plant. I was excited to read that California actually is going to reduce their carbon emissions by 20% by 2025. But unfortunately, you get a lot of your energy from Nevada. And Nevada gets their energy from coal-fired power plants. And they have in the plans to build 6 new coal-fired power plants in the near future. Actually, there's like 120 new coal-fired power plants to be built in the United States slated. Since 9-1-1, and you know the war that we're in over oil, coal is now the patriotic fuel. So needless to say, there's a boom going on now. More mountains are being blasted. When we talk about mountaintop removal, it's exactly what we're talking about. You have a mountain, and you have a valley, and you have a mountain, and you have a valley. They just blow off the top of the mountain, and they shove it into the valley. They take the coal, they blow some more, they shove it over the side, sometimes going down 2, 3, 4 layer seams of coal to get what they want. And in the end, one of the most diverse hardwood forests in the world is reduced to rubble. And what's planted there is Chinese lespediza. It's an invasive grass. Nothing won't eat it. It doesn't support any wildlife. Actually, one old fellow in the mountains said, if a deer crossed Black Mountain right now, he'd have to pack his lunch. you know, what about planting something that wildlife won't feed on? It's really unusual. And the coal company is, it's really hard. I remember going to Washington, and we were testifying against the Senate committee because we had filed suit against somebody, I don't remember who it was at that point, because it's illegal, probably the Army Corps of Engineers, because it's illegal to put mining waste in a stream. And so the Bush administration just rushed to change the wording so it's no longer mine waste, it's mine fuel. So it's not illegal under the Clean Water Act to put fuel in a stream. You know, there's actually lots of laws that says you can't do this, but unfortunately none of these laws are actually enforced. As a matter of fact, in 2005 alone in Kentucky, 143,000 acres was permitted for strip mining. And in that was 240 waivers, stream buffer zone waivers, that says, so if they bury a stream, if the Army Corps of Engineers say they can bury a stream, then they're supposed to do what's called stream mitigation. If they bury the stream over here, then they're supposed to repair another stream to bring it up, to pay for burying this stream. But in Kentucky, they just waive the fact that the stream is even there. So over 400 streams was in these 200 and some waivers in Kentucky alone. And you know, it's the headwaters. It's the headwaters of the Kentucky River. The Kentucky River runs into the Ohio River, which runs into the Mississippi River, which runs into the Gulf of Mexico. So if you kill the headwater streams, what are you doing to the rest of the streams down? My family has suffered a lot from mining. My brother was injured in the coal mining accident in the same mines where the five guys were killed just a couple months ago. And he died at the age of 41. And it was not only from the injuries that he sustained in the coal mines, but the lack of health care. And that's just not unusual. And my father died of black lung. He was about 75 years old. And the creek that I grew up on, and, you know, I was all about creeks and mountains and streams. And as a little girl running through the mountains, I didn't even have shoes. I don't know. I must not have been afraid of snakes or anything at that time. But something happened. I'm a little afraid now. But I remember I never had, you know, we never wore shoes in the summertime. You just ran around without them. And there was a creek right at the end of our yard, and my grandmother put a bar of soap down there, and I would have to stop at the creek and wash my feet before I could come in the house. And now this creek actually runs orange with acid mine drainage. And the company that was responsible for that, needless to say, I didn't stop because they sort of got on my bad side one time when I called the road department and told them that they needed to clean up the roadway, that my kids were having to wade coal muck to get on the school bus. And I'm talking, there was a mud puddle of coal muck, which is about the color of this microphone, about up to their knees. And I just asked them, could you clean up the road? And so the road department called the mining company and told them that I complained on them. So I look out, and there's this truck just circling my yard, and there was no reason for that truck to be on my heel. And so I called the guy at the road department back, and I said, did you tell that the mining company that I complained? And they said, yeah. And I said, well, I think I need to talk to your supervisor. And he got really upset with me and told me that that was something I needed to learn to live with, that I lived in a coal mining community. And I told him I begged to differ with him, but my kids didn't have to wait coal muck to get on the school bus. So needless to say, I never gave up. And a few years ago, I kept following this company and watching them and watching them. And they had 12 different corporations. And what they do is they'll file a very small reclamation bond. And they go in, they mine the coal, and then they file bankruptcy on that corporation. And then move on to the next. So out of 12 companies, they filed bankruptcy on 8. And I just kept on with the state and the federal OSCM and stayed on them and stayed on them. And I actually proved, I had talked to Robert Kennedy Jr. about it, and he said, Terry, pierce the corporate veil. And I thought, okay. I didn't exactly know what piercing the corporate veil was. Still not real sure of what it is, but I did it. So I actually proved to OSM that they had done this over and over and over, and they went after their personal assets to reclaim the mines that they had left in a mess. So I actually succeeded in that, and needless to say, they didn't like me very well. And at one point, they sent my brother to my house to tell me what good guys they were, and I showed my brother the door. And so about 10 years later, my brother came back to me and said, you know, you were right. And I said, and this is an older brother. You know, when an older brother will come to his little sister and say, you know, you were right all alone. And it's like one of those moments you'll never forget. So everybody know that coal is a cheap source of energy? Well, let me tell you, there's nothing cheap about it. 2003, a report that we had that said 800,000 acres had been strip mined. And then, you know, if you add up 2005, 143,000 acres, and that's not counting 2004, and then what's happened in 2006. So 1 million acres of land has been strip mined that will no longer grow anything that's indigenous to the land. And the people that lives under it. And when you start adding up, I mean, how can you add up the devastation to the air, to the roads, to the streams? I mean, it's just, you could go on forever with numbers. And to me, the true cost is the cost that people pay every day with their lives. So I started doing interviews with people, and I call it Exploring the True Cost of Coal with Stories from the Valleys. And I go out and I listen to people's stories, and they tell me about the price that they pay in their own home, whether it's when they come home from work, that everything that used to be hanging on the walls is now laying on the floor, or else their windows are being blasted out of their house. And it's up to the people to prove that the industry did it to them, not the industry to prove that they didn't. And communities that we have 100-year floods 2 or 3 times a year, you know. And, of course, it's never the coal company's fault. It's always an act of God. God's really mean to us in Eastern Kentucky. So that's the true cost when you lose those streams, when they're running orange with acid mine drainage or black with coal muck. And you know, the coal industry is the only industry in the nation that doesn't have to report its chemical usage. And for years and years and years, they've used chemicals to float coal. And when they clean the coal, they actually put all these chemicals in it, and it causes the coal to rise to the top and the rocks to fall to the bottom. And then when they get finished with this, they move it on top of a mountain somewhere. And they have these, they call them ponds, sludge ponds or slurry ponds, but they're actually toxic waste looming on mountains near you. There's like 120 ponds in Kentucky or lakes in Kentucky that FEMA, you know how good they are, that has rated at high risk or substantial high risk for flooding. But unfortunately, we can't get anything done about it. And I could go on forever, but I'm going to pass on to Bert.
That was Terry Blanton from Kentuckians for the Commonwealth. Now you will hear a question from the audience and answers by Wendell Berry and Michael Pollan.
The World Watch Institute has calculated that there are sufficient renewable resources to meet all of the world's energy needs now. I'd like, Michael, you've been around the country looking at talking to farmers of all kinds, and I'd like you to talk a little bit, if you could, about the role of farmers in helping produce that energy in a sustainable way. But before that, I'd like if Wendell could talk a little bit about what it's going to take to change that thinking, that old idea of progress, and try to understand this, how we're going to maybe retell the story or tell a new story about our relationship with nature.
Well, my Amish friend David Klein says that some of these problems are going to take care of themselves, and what he has in mind is the cost of energy that's going up. But a lot of the chickens of progress are coming home to roost, to use a new metaphor. The failures of this technological structure that we've bought into so absolutely in all kinds of land use, the failures are becoming too obvious to deny now. Nobody in agriculture can deny that the hypoxic zone exists. Nobody can deny that they're giving pregnant women and children in Kansas free water because there's too much atrazine in the groundwater for them to drink it safely. Nobody can deny that this cheap fossil fuel that we've made everything depend on is no longer cheap. And so we're in the midst of realizing as a people a number of really large, serious, potentially very dangerous miscalculations. I've argued from time to time that what this country needs to learn is how to subtract. We can add and multiply, but we can't take the gross and deduct the costs and come out with a net that makes any sense at all. We've been talking here about, implicitly all evening, about accounting in the coal industry, in the coal economy. Michael's, the whole first part of his book, as I remember the first part, is implicitly about the accounting in the corn economy. And Wes Jackson has suggested that the great science of this century, if we have any sanity left at all, is going to be accounting. We've got to learn to set the books up. We've got to learn what the real costs are. We can't quantify a lot of the costs, but there are a lot of costs that are quantifiable that we're not quantifying. And when we begin to do the accounting properly, this is going to qualify our confidence about progress to a very considerable extent. We've used, for instance, half the world's supply of petroleum in my lifetime. If you're 23 years old, I think about half of it's been used in your lifetime. Michael.
I don't know how much more I can add to that. You know, Wendell's written a lot about the problem of living in a complicated industrial civilization is that it's very difficult to see the connections between things. It's very difficult to see the connection between these lights and those mountains. And to the extent we can begin to perceive those, as we have begun to with food, I think, to a considerable extent, and only in the last few years, people make better choices when they have those choices and when they can see those connections. The challenge of doing it in energy is of another magnitude, I think. But what is particularly disturbing about what we've heard is that, you know, we talked about the overarching theme of the evening was land use, and it is, but it's also about local economies. And to the extent that Marin is building that thing, kind of a post-industrial local economy and all the benefits that flow from it, Eastern Kentucky is the very opposite of that, is an extractive node in the global economy. And what is particularly alarming about that is that the conditions of creating a local economy are being destroyed.
Right.
Because if you think of how you people have built this economy here, in the end, it really depends on the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you still have the soil, and you can redeem the soil, and build an economy on that, there's always hope. Once the soil has been essentially flipped over, you've buried the topsoil, you've destroyed the bottom land by filling it with mountaintops, that's the end.
Yeah.
That is the end. That is the defacement of the earth. And that's why this has to stop, and has to stop soon.
That was Michael Pollan. You heard a one-hour program on mountaintop removal in Kentucky with poet Wendell Berry and Terry Blanton and Burt Lauderdale of Kentuckians for the Commonwealth. They were sponsored by Marin Organic, an organization dedicated to turning Marin County into the first organic county in the country. They spoke at Toby's Feed Barn in Point Reyes Station on September 8, 2006, and were recorded by Community Radio KWMR. Visit TUC Radio's website at www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org for links to this story and more information. Please find a pen to write down a phone number for information on how to order an audio tape or CD of this talk. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your CD or tape order is our only support and is essential in keeping us on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE. For information on how to order, you can get your tape or CD with Wendell Berry and Kentuckians for the Commonwealth by mail or credit card by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 1-877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.